Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Wendy Franks. Wendy is a business professional who is in the process of launching what can be described as a side hustle. I've known Wendy for over 15 years, and in that time, I've seen her entrepreneurial spirit shine across multiple ventures, in her day job, and navigating the complexities of being a single mum. Wendy's story is important because entrepreneurial journeys are as different as the people behind them. Thank you for listening to Entrepreneurship with Peter Christo, and here is my conversation with Wendy Franks. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm really well, Peter. How are you?
I'm very, very well.
Good.
Thank you for taking the leap of faith and joining the Entrepreneurs podcast with Peter Christo. I don't really like that name, to be honest.
Which part? Entrepreneurs.
The Entrepreneurs podcast with Peter Christo. I think we might sort of consider changing it at some point. But anyway, why don't we start off by you telling us a little bit about who Wendy is?
Gosh, that always feels like such a loaded question because it's sort of this, how far back do I go? But at the moment, Wendy is, I work full-time. I'm a full-time mom. I'm a business manager at a primary school. And I'm a hobby artist. I've just launched a YouTube channel with my little art hobby. I think I want to go back and start again. I don't know how to describe myself as I am.
Okay. So I guess, you know, we're all sorts of things to different people. And I guess this is one of the issues that I have. Well, not issues, but these are some of the conversations I have with people about, you know, what's an entrepreneur? And you know, who are you and what constitutes an entrepreneur? So, you know, we met 15 odd years ago.
Yeah.
So you were my client.
Yes.
So you came to me as an entrepreneur and you were a business manager for CPA Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we start there. What part of you at that time was a person with a job, but obviously a reasonably senior job? And maybe let's understand where you were at with your personal situation at the time and why somebody who obviously was by themselves, has a young son, and at the same time had this angst to spin up a business.
Yeah, well, it's funny, isn't it? Because in some ways the full-time day job, the senior job I had at CPA, was simply because of necessity. I was a full-time mom and starting up a business, which was Saltwater Jobs, which at the time was going quite well, that up until the global financial crisis, and a divorce. So between the two of those things, that led to the position at CPA Australia out of necessity. The global financial crisis meant that the business just got parked, but it was something that I was... I was determined that I was going to somehow make it go. So this was where you came in to help me try and repurpose it, repackage it. But I think that sometimes when the horse bolts, you just need to let it go.
Yeah,
and
sure.
That was certainly the case with Saltwater Jobs. By the time I was trying to repurpose it, repackage it, many companies had already come out and been successful in that space. Mm. So whilst I did think that there was definitely a demand for it, I lost the opportunity of first in. Mm-hmm. And I really just didn't have the kind of money backing that lots of other people did. But
yeah.
So I threw a lot of money at trying to make that go. And
thank you.
Eventually, yes. But the best thing that came out of it was a beautiful friendship with you.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that,
totally.
That was really good. It took me a long time to just go, okay, I'm done with that.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah. So, yeah, sometimes you've got to... you know, stop whipping the dead horse.
The dead horse.
Because, yes. You know, somebody will still like, yeah, I can help you, and all that sort of stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, and varying levels of integrity. But what interests me, too, is, you know, other people in that situation, just recently divorced, young son, would have just gone all in with making the career path or keeping their job secure.
Yes.
You didn't do that.
No.
What?
I've never really been the one to take the responsible choice. So, you know, for me, it was...
That's honest.
But that's the truth. That is absolutely... I was more determined to make a business successful than I was to just create a sense of security in my life. You know, I still had this burning desire. And from the earliest age, I had this burning desire that I was going to make something and it was going to be amazing. And
But you did. You've made Thomas.
Yes, yes. Pretty much the only success I really truly have had. So if you can call yourself an entrepreneur by having a great kid, then I won. I did it.
Well, you certainly manage risk, that's for sure. I actually had the same conversation in my previous session with Norm Jenkins, that, you know, we birth businesses because we can't birth kids, right? You were trying to do both,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Well, you did one, definitely.
Yeah.
Has it always been part of your character to be, I mean, you described it as, you know, not making the best decisions. I don't know about that. I think it's kind of something within a character of a human being. And so some people do it more successfully than others, but I don't know that they do it necessarily better than others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's an element of, you know, get a million monkeys talking on typewriters and someone's going to do, you know, War and Peace, you know.
Right, yes.
But of course, some people are more methodical than others, and that is applicable in some businesses and not in others.
Yes.
Did you see that as part of your personality when you were growing up?
Methodical? No. Irresponsible decisions? Yes. Right. It wasn't so much that I made bad choices. I just took the path that most people would be afraid of, I guess, is the choices that I've made in the past. Taking risk has never been something that has terrified me because I see it as part of the adventure.
Mm-hmm.
I think my biggest problem is the methodical nature of a business. Once it gets beyond that exciting risk factor, then it is about plotting the course perhaps maybe doing the same thing over and over again for a long period of time. That's where I struggle because then it stops being exciting. And,
So this is on point with what I've found with my advisory stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So somebody will come to me with a great idea, or even that they've started and they're very excited,
yes,
because the risk is really low.
Yeah,
they haven't invested a lot of money, they haven't invested a lot of time,
but
they're imagining this amazing outcome where they're living the life of Riley, right?
Yeah,
as a consequence of their result, and then over time. The excitement goes from 20 out of 20, or maybe 20 out of 10, and it slowly comes down.
Mm.
And then the risk goes up because you're burning through money and you're going through time. So now you've got the sunk cost.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see whether you agree with this. So what happens is that suddenly you've got to apply a certain amount of discipline to break this down into projects.
Mm-hmm.
So project number one, you know, do your business plan, sort of, you know, blah, blah, blah. Project number two, I don't know, whatever it is, spin up a website, get a prototype going, talk to some customers, hear some no's, you know, and then suddenly this feels like work, right? So do you think there's a disconnect that the successful entrepreneurs are kind of ready to do that? So it's not just that they've got investors, but they've got enough personal discipline to be able to do them, you know, chip away, eat the elephant one bite at a time.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, there's a thing called, and again, I mentioned this in previous conversations around the low time preference and high time preference.
Mm-hmm.
So I want my excitement now.
Yeah.
I want my up now. I want my Tesla now.
Yeah.
Right. So have you been I need it now type person, or have you been happy to wait for, you know, the investment to yield, or the, you know, the opportunity to develop?
I'm definitely an instant gratification kind of person.
Same as you were 20 years ago?
But I think, you know, I'm more refined now, obviously, but, you know, I see the pattern of some things that I've done. I definitely don't do well with no. That's something that I think more successful people would be able to see the no, hear the no, and then pivot or ignore it altogether. Whereas,
or use it, I guess.
Or use it, absolutely. Yeah,
and to kind of refine their offering, or think about a better way. Or...
Absolutely. Whereas I think in the past I have seen defeat pretty early on with the no, and looked for things that would allow me to get that sense of, oh, it's good, you know, gratification straight away. I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, I think the hardest thing about starting a business, because, well, I've started a few things, I've gone down a few paths, is...
How many before?
I'd say 4 or 5 now.
Okay.
So, but different things, like always just, okay, well, I'm going to do this now. I'm going to write a book. I'm going to start this business. I'm going to start making videos, you know, and it usually starts with some sort of successful thing that I did, that I dabbled in, and then suddenly went, well, this could be something so much bigger than what it is.
Right.
But the problem is that when it suddenly feels like work and it suddenly feels like your job, then it's a change in mindset that happens. And I don't actually know what it is, but if it suddenly feels that I have to do it, I don't want to do it anymore. And it's, it, you know, I think anyone listening to this is going, well, yeah, no wonder you're not successful. You're a child. I am a child. And I really resonated with a conversation you had with Norm about needing to always have a few things on the go.
Right.
You needed to have at least 3 things going on. So if one person crossed your name out, you were still okay. And I feel like this new thing, this shiny new thing that I'm doing, is the right thing, because it's not it. It's not everything. It is not a business. It's a passion.
Yeah.
And that is all. And I want to keep it that way so that it never feels like work. Like grind, like someone's telling me I have to be here at this time to do this thing.
So why do you think? I mean, you're a pretty intuitive sort of person. What is it about a personality, not even necessarily yours, that would be, you know, not recalcitrant, but I guess, you know, counterintuitive, right? So this feels like work. And then I imagine my teenage daughter crossing her arms and saying, no, I'm not doing it.
I see my son, I see me in my son, or vice versa, all the time. It's that issue with authority that, you know, I don't want to be told to do something. I want to decide that I want to do something. I don't want to be told to do it.
Right.
But, you know, I know it's probably sounding like I'm a toddler having a tantrum, but there's a lot of artists especially that go through this sort of thing. The moment someone asks them to create a custom piece, it suddenly becomes a job and not art, not a passion, not them expressing themselves on a canvas. It's them doing what they're told, they don't want to do it anymore, and they lose their creativity.
So maybe artists' artistic endeavors kind of suffer from that, in that, you know, I'm doing this because I'm passionate about art, painting, you know, acting, music, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm compromising my, you know, not my integrity so much, but maybe my, my, I don't know what to call it, kind of that muse that you've got inside you.
Yeah, my artistic style. Artistic,
and my integrity, right?
Yes.
Because now I've got to put a price on my art and, you know, all that sort of stuff. So my brain's going in a bunch of places. So first thing that I'm thinking about is that, did you learn something about Wendy as a human being? Did you become your own psychotherapist?
Yeah, I think you do. Like of course, with every failed attempt at something, you learn something about yourself. I guess for me, I think my deepest, darkest enemy, I guess, is my imposter syndrome that I have. That has haunted me from day dot. I have part of me that is absolutely wanting to jump in every single time that I get a good idea and run with it and know that I can do this. But then there's this other part of me that is constantly saying, who are you kidding? You're not an artist. You're a creative person at best, but you're not an artist. Don't call yourself an entrepreneur. You've never been successful at anything. An entrepreneur is someone who has had great success.
Is it?
Well, that's what my head tells me. That's, you know, I would never classify myself as an entrepreneur.
I would argue an entrepreneur. I claim to have a little bit of knowledge in this area. Right?
You are, yes, of course. So, you're educated in
and you know, I've kind of been doing this stuff for 30 odd years. I would say an entrepreneur is anybody who goes off the reservation and tries to do something that is outside their reach and you know, look to make something happen that doesn't look obvious immediately.
Yeah.
So even if it's in a corporation where they're, you know, they're being innovative in their thinking and they're doing something that ultimately will result in people having jobs and people, you know, the company making an income, or, you know, yourself making an income that can stand on its own. So I'm imagining, and I guess we'll talk a little bit about your venture now, but so, you know, ultimately, if you can start off with something that, you know, what you're doing at the moment, then think to yourself, you know, I've got enough traction now where I can start to operationalize this and bring in an income for myself and not compromise the passion of what I'm doing, but give myself an income.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe I need to think about some boring things like marketing and, you know, setting up something that allows people to pay and get stuff delivered and whatever. Not necessarily a bad thing. But the start can be quite, like, you know, actors were acting probably for free back in, you know, in Thebes and, you know, in Greece and, you know, and now actors get paid ridiculous. some actors,
no, obviously. Yeah.
Get ridiculous amount of Tom Cruise. So do you think, where am I going with this? So do you think somewhere inside you, you can separate the two?
Yeah, I think I have to some extent. I think I've learned enough about myself that I know that chasing the money is never going to work for me. I am, as much as I want it, I'm not driven by it. And no matter how hard I try, I cannot force myself to just do the work for the money. It has to be for the love of it. It has to be passion for me. I'm driven by passion. So to be able to understand that part and put it together where perhaps I do always have a side hustle, I guess, and not make it my main thing, my absolute do or die, bread and butter, everything is all riding on this. Because the moment everything's riding on it, I think for me it would just probably fall to pieces, to be honest.
Right.
And I just don't like the stress of it all and the pressure. But, you know, going back to perhaps saltwater jobs, the idea came around because I saw something that there was a need in an area that I knew a lot about. I was passionate about it. But what was I passionate about? I was passionate about the opportunity. Yeah. I wasn't necessarily passionate about running a job board for the shipping industry.
Yeah. So, so I was just going to say, tell the listeners what saltwater jobs was.
Well, saltwater jobs came out of 5 years working on cruise ships and the super yacht industry. Coming out of that, moving to Australia, having my child going on maternity leave, and starting prior to that, I was dabbling in a yachting recruitment company in Melbourne that was just launching here. I was helping them out. I became very aware of the shortage of skilled labor in the shipping and yachting industry. And it wasn't that people didn't exist. It's just that there was nowhere to advertise for them. There was the current seek.com.au did not exist. There was not job boards for that. So people had to know the specific recruitment companies, especially in the yachting industry. You basically had to knock on doors of recruitment companies in Europe and the US in order to be able to get your resume out there and to get a job. But the yachting industry and the shipping industry were growing so quickly that there was no labor. There was such a labor shortage out there. So it was the perfect time to create a job board to attract into a funnel all of those people and, of course, the jobs. So it was the perfect market. There was no one out there doing that. It started with a bang. But then the GFC happened. And when the global financial crisis hit, the first area to be completely crippled was the superyacht industry. The billionaires probably still had billions of dollars, but they didn't want to be seen riding around on their superyacht. So they either they went broke or they just laid up their yachts. And then within 2 months, there were lines of people outside of yachting. Agencies in Antibes and Monaco, down the street and around the block. There was it pretty much blew up the whole industry. So that was that. And of course, as I mentioned, the divorce thing. So everything just kind of went bang all at the same time, which was probably perfect timing, really, because if it wasn't for the divorce, probably would have blown him up if the GFC didn't. So that was it.
So you don't think that So one of the things is I think it's a book called Grit. So Belandra in episode 2 talked about grit, right? So here's a guy who's got grit. So, you know, he lost his mom, you know, to suicide at 2.
Oh,
had no education, you know, growing up in the streets of Bangladesh. Here's a guy with grit, right? He's done it tough and he's on his third venture and he's doing great. And, you know, came in as a refugee, sort of wangled his way into it. I say wangled. No disrespect to him, he in an entrepreneurial way, he got into a degree in computer science and the rest is history. He's done really, really well. But he's a tenacious guy who has had zero privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And it's forged him. Do you think that Saltwater Jobs, so if Saltwater Jobs is up now, do you think if he had, you know, kept going?
Mm-hmm.
You would have solved enough problems to get it viable?
Oh, definitely. I absolutely think that it would have been. I think the biggest thing the hurdle that I would have had to overcome was to be able to grow fast enough. Because, you know, there was one of the major yachting magazines quickly came up on my coattails, I guess, after I started Saltwater Jobs. They spun up a recruitment site as well, and they had plenty of money behind them. So I could have been left in the dust, to be honest. You know, sometimes
they could have said, look, you know, do it for us.
Absolutely. It could have gone a million different ways. You know, if it wasn't for the GFC, I have no doubt it would have been successful. It probably could have been bought out, or it would have been successful in its own right, because, you know, sometimes what is the saying, that the first in has
gets the arrows.
So the point is get the
arrows, and the second in they tilt the fields and get the crop.
Yes, but you know, there's always MySpace and Facebook, so you know, maybe I would have just been.
Well, MySpace was first, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Right. And that where is it arrow? Now? Go on. So anyway, who knows? I don't know how.
Well, mind you, Bitcoin was first, and it's
the king. That's true. Absolutely, it's still the king. And you know, but it's classic Wendy, if you must, because I started this really not knowing what I was doing. I knew the idea. I knew exactly where it needed to go. I knew what it needed to be, but I didn't know how to do it. Mm. I was just winging it, you know. And in some ways, that's probably been a lesson as well. But, you know, I'm one of those people that I don't like to learn for the sake of learning, but I do love to learn. And, you know, when I'm faced with a problem, I will find every possible way to solve it.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'm going in blind. And I think in some ways I was going in a bit blind with that. In the beginning it was working out great, but could I have scaled it? I don't know if I could have.
Okay. So, fairly or unfairly, I'll put you in the camp of part-time entrepreneur.
Yeah, definitely. Okay.
So would you describe what you're doing now as a lifestyle entrepreneurial venture?
Yeah, I would. I think that I think in some ways I've kind of put aside the idea of I want to have a business and just simply gone with this is something that I love to do as a hobby. So is it possible to pivot this hobby into a venture, I guess? My art really only started 2 years ago, and it was just, again, it was just a hobby. But then that quickly grew into, well, why not have an Etsy page and take that hobby into a little side hustle? Many people have grown a side hustle into something quite spectacular.
Sure.
So why couldn't that be me?
It's a global thing, right?
It's a global thing, absolutely. Yeah. But then, of course, soon after that started, I realized I didn't want to make 600 bits of art that looked the same. I didn't want to create the same thing over again. I didn't want to have a warehouse filled with art pieces that I was laying out in an assembly line, creating so I could sell on my Etsy page.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's work. Mm-hmm. That's not art.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how you make.
You want to maintain. You want to maintain, I guess, your I guess the integrity associated with what you're doing. Like, it's legitimately, you know, the horse and the cart, right? The cart's not the business.
Yeah.
The horse is the passion for art.
Mm, yes.
Right.
The passion.
And then if you
can
maintain the passion for art, not a bad name for a business, by the way. Then the cart can be the business.
Right? Yes.
And it's not. So the motivator is, I love this shit.
Yeah.
Oh, I fucking love this shit.
Yeah.
Right. But you know, behind it is, because I love this stuff, here's the business platform that I need to deploy.
Mm.
But I'm not going to compromise the quality of what I'm doing. I should switch off.
Sorry, I'm hopefully at that. No, that's you.
So when you get something from the kids or the girlfriend, right, it comes through. So I have got it on site, but not for them.
Okay.
So interestingly, I mean, I like that.
Mm.
You know, the fact that we can, I think, you know, it's kind of like the vision and the mission of a business.
Mm-hmm.
So if the vision is, you know, great art in the, you know, the format that you work in, you know, maintaining that passion is part of the values of the business.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we care about what we do.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and then, you know, to be able to continue to do what we do, we want to make sure that we get enough money coming through to be able to build this and be able to deliver that value proposition to more people around the world.
Yeah.
And inevitably, you will have competition, you'll have other things, so you need to kind of put your, you know, your hard hat on and say, okay, this is the business side of me and I just need to look at this.
Mm-hmm.
You can take that hard hat off and go, okay, this is the artist.
Yeah, well, and I think in some ways that's kind of what I've gone with now. Instead of just going, looking at the business side of things and going, well, I know that that's the recipe that works, so what can I do that with?
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. I want to be able to make art. I love making beautiful things, but I don't like making the same beautiful thing over and over and over again.
Okay, and we've talked about that.
Yes, absolutely. So this way, if I can learn how to do certain pieces of art, then I can share that knowledge. So in some ways, I really want the business to be about selling my art, for sure, but more so about selling the process too.
Yeah.
This is how it's made.
Yeah.
For those people out there that are similar to me, they see something beautiful on Instagram, they watch it being made,
right.
They want to try and do it themselves.
Yeah.
It always looks a lot easier than it actually is.
Yeah.
But that's the audience that I'm trying to tap into now.
Yeah.
And then from there, the business itself is multifaceted, of course. It is still the Etsy page.
Mm.
But more than anything, it's the YouTube channel. It's the how it's made. This is the piece.
Yeah.
And subscribing to the exact same model that everyone else is, well, I'm not really doing that. I'm sort of doing art that makes me happy and not just art that is currently trending at the moment. There's enough how-to YouTube channels out there that I don't need to be that. But.
Okay, so maybe tell the listeners a little bit about what this thing is, because we kind of skirted around. So what's it called? What does it do? Why does it do it?
Well, it's not really a thing. The business is called Stoneflow Designs. The art initially started as resin art, ocean resin art on limestone pieces. That has evolved because, of course, well, once again, I didn't want to make 300 bits of stone. So Now it's really just about creating. Majority of the art that I do is all centered around ocean art. So it's on stone
possibly
canvases.
Possibly volcanoes.
Still. Possibly, yes. But it's anything that seems to take my fancy at the moment. So it's basically trending at the moment, of course. It's the resin art. It's the ocean art. It's the textured art. It's the plaster art. And that's the style in which that I'm creating art at the moment.
Who likes this stuff?
Lots of people like this stuff.
So I guess in business parlance, you know, target market. So who's going to jump on? It's not me.
No, I think the audience is the people that are really Etsy people. People who are on Etsy looking at handmade, one-of-a-kind art are the kind of people that are going to jump onto the YouTube channel and learn how to make it. So okay. I think with the growth of Instagram Reels, it has grown exponentially, the amount of people that are just turning their kitchen table into an art studio.
Right.
And that's who I'm targeting. I want to get into the kitchen of those people that look at something and go, well, that can't be that hard. I want to do that. How can I make that? All right, I'll jump onto my YouTube channel. As far as I'm concerned, I will share every single technique that I have learned along the way. Imitation is the highest form of flattery, isn't it?
Sure.
So I would love more than anything if someone loved a piece of work that I have done and they want to create it themselves and I want to show them how. So. Okay.
So let's get into the business side of things here a little bit. So how do you commercialize this? Like, so are you expecting ad revenue from the channel? Are you going to receive orders for, you know, art? Are you going to say, look, I'm going to do this series, you know, these 10? Tell us about that.
So I think that last one is what I'm aiming for. What my end,
which was inspired
goal,
by me, right?
Which was inspired by you, but there's a few artists out there that have inspired me as well, and you know, that is what I'm trying to achieve. I want to be well known enough, because art, a piece of art, can be beautiful. But what makes you want to buy it?
Mm-hmm.
Because you actually know who the artist is.
Yeah.
You can say, oh, this was made by Wendy Franks, or, you know, Stoneflow Designs, or this is a one of a collection of only 10 pieces that were sold.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I want it to be. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to be a $400 piece of art. I want it to be a $2,000 piece of art. Mm-hmm. I want it to be a limited edition. I want enough people to know who I am. That when I do release a series of pieces, which of course won't be 600 because I'll get bored with 600. So I want them to be waiting with bated breath for the release and then for them to buy it. So the revenue stream is the art predominantly, but the YouTube channel as well. You know, as soon as you get 1,000 subscribers, you can monetize your YouTube channel. So that is something.
Is that the trigger, is it?
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, that will probably take anywhere from 6 months to a year before you get 1,000 subscribers. And then you're really not making a huge amount of money off of ad revenue, but you are making money off of ad revenue. But you're also driving traffic to your Etsy store. People are getting to know you. They're perhaps buying your art. You could have other merchandise for sale on your YouTube channel. So I feel like combining my art and my personality will work quite well for me in a YouTube channel. I've always wanted a YouTube channel, but I've never really felt like I have something that I could share over and over and over again. And for me, sharing the knowledge that I've gained so far on art and the continual growth in that space is something that I can continue making videos on.
Okay, fantastic. So what? How long are you going to do it? How long would it take for you to say, okay, this is now a legitimate business?
Well, I think that's why we're here, isn't it? This is the very, very, very beginning.
Mm.
Last time we spoke, I had 17 subscribers. I think you might have been 17.
Oh, well, 17.
And that was last week. And now I have 23. Okay. So it is a...
You can do a graph.
It's, It's a growth story, I think. Mm. I think in a year's time when we come back and talk about this, mm. the channel.
And we will.
And we will. We mm. will, absolutely. And, you know, it could go up one of two ways. One, it could be, you know, I've already got 100,000 subscribers. Two, it could be, it was too hard. I canned it. I'm just doing the Etsy. But I think it's going to be the first one. I feel like once the momentum starts, it will grow rather quickly.
Are people talking to you? Like, are they messaging you and saying, hey, blah, blah, you know, really like this, didn't like that, you're crazy.
Well, no one said they don't like it yet. So I'm waiting for that whole...
They don't like it. Why are you doing it? Why are you telling me?
But this is an experience you have to be prepared for. When you jump onto YouTube and you put yourself out there, which is something that terrifies me, to be honest,
yeah.
because, as I mentioned before, I don't do well with no. I don't do well with someone
talk about this.
Saying that they don't like something. And that is part of the world that we live in. The
right.
trolls, the horrible people that are just... They're just jumping onto popular content.
Have you seen that?
Yeah, well, not on mine yet.
Not on yours yet, okay.
But it's not popular enough to get the trolls. So once I get to a point where YouTube is actually putting my stuff out there regularly, I am going to have to brace myself for the trolls
to say
you know, that's crap or whatever. But in answer to your question, yes, some people are commenting, mostly just really nice comments. Just, wow, I love it. That's amazing. A few questions about the process, but that's exactly what I'm looking for.
So is the value proposition around, I'll show you how?
Absolutely. The value proposition is, if you love it, I'm happy to share how it was made. And some people don't necessarily want to watch art to be being made as a way of learning the process and dusting off their kitchen table.
Mm.
They just love watching it being made. It's something that some people are quite captivated by, even though they haven't left their couch and they don't intend to. So
it's
a bit horrible. Yeah, that's right. Actually, it is very much so.
So let's go back to the no. And this intrigues me. And I walk a fine line here because I'm afraid I'm going to sound like a misogynistic pig, which I don't want to be. and certainly don't think I am. But do you think that we're socialized where boys can handle no?
Mm.
More than girls can handle no.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting working in the corporate space as I was for 5 years, seeing the difference in style, management style between men and women. It's entirely different. Women take no personal. It is personal to me.
You don't like me?
That's right.
Oh my God.
Men do not
care.
They don't care. It doesn't faze them. And that is what you need in business. You need to be tough-skinned and not fazed and just, okay, pivot, move on, whatever. I'm just going to carry on, you know. And to some extent, there are certain people that I've also seen that, you know, just are simply insane, narcissistic people that are incapable of being affected by a rejection or a no.
A rejection, I take that as a challenge.
Yes, exactly.
You won't get a big wait for it.
Yeah. Well, in the business world, there seems to be a lot of narcissistic people. But, you know, this one particular one was the leader of the corporation. So I won't mention any names there. But it's interesting. And I admire that. You know, the person that I was just referring to was almost like the Donald Trump syndrome, you know, that just he was so blatant in his approach to everything. And it was embarrassing to everyone else around him that was watching him. But he was not fazed by it at all. And in some ways, I admired that because... Right. I would never have been able to withstand the scrutiny that he received by the decisions he was making.
Right.
But he just carried on, kept going, and
Well,
until he got removed from the position. But there's a real difference, and that's not misogynistic at all. I think that's just how we're built, and I do.
Well, at least it's how we're socialized. I mean, certainly, I would say we're designed in a particular way, but certainly we're taught how to be how we are.
Yes.
Like we're brought up in an ecosystem, right?
Mm.
I love the old story about the two young fish swimming through the water, and the old fish is coming towards them. And the old fish says, "Come on, fellas, how's the water today?" And the young fish say, "What's water?" All right. Mm-hmm. So it's like we don't know.
Yes.
That we're being socialized to handle rejection.
Yeah.
I had a mate, and again, I'm walking a fine line here. I had a mate, you know, when we were in our 20s, we'd go out and, you know, everyone was trying to hook up with somebody, and he was just a numbers guy. He would just go out and talk to everybody briefly, and by the end of the night, he'd have a friend.
Right, yeah.
And he was not the prettiest thing
in
the place, right, but he was a numbers guy.
Right? Yeah, I know that. I do. It's not something I just don't deal with rejection very well at all. So, yeah.
And then would you, if it meant commercial success, if you knew that it meant commercial success, financial independence, would you change? Would you change your view?
I think now that I'm older and wiser, I've learned enough about myself to realize that I need to overcome that. I need to accept the fact that many people potentially are not going to like me, and that's
like you.
Okay. Yeah,
like
I know. I am a people pleaser, and it's in my nature to want to pivot somehow to please that one person who said, "I hate it," or "I don't like it," or, you know, I would be inclined to want to say why, but, you know, but all that being said, I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to sacrifice what I'm doing because it upsets me.
Yeah, sure. Now,
anyway, I would have probably.
I totally get it. I talk to so many people, you know, of course, off the podcast as well as on it, but I find that. So I'm more like you than I am like them. Mm-hmm. So there are people who are quite passionate about what this means to them to express themselves through a commercial venture.
Yeah.
Kind of like an artist.
Right.
And there are other people who just see it as this is a methodology that if I manage it right, will put money in my pocket.
Mm.
And I don't care what it is.
Yes. Yeah. I wish I could be like that, but I'm not like that.
But, you know, it might be, look, I'm not into potato farming, but I'm a technology guy, so it makes sense for me to be in technology stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But if I could do it in potato farming, I wouldn't care. Mm-hmm. Right? It just means that from point A to point B over the next 3 years, I'm going to go from this much money to this much money, and I'm going to do it.
But money doesn't make us happy. Yes, stuff is great, and I'm certainly striving for financial independence, but the motivation behind it is I just can't be motivated by money. And, you know, knowing that if you do this, then that, then you'll make a lot of money. And unless I'm happy doing this and that for 3 years straight.
I couldn't agree more. You know, if I wanted a lot of money, I know how to break into buildings. I was in the military, you know, I can probably rappel down a wall and fall through a window and, you know, put a knife in somebody's throat and you know, take their money.
You could, yeah.
Actually, maybe I couldn't. but still, you have to sleep at night.
Mm.
So, it's interesting. So, okay, so you're at that early stage with regards to this venture. So where do you expect to be in 12 months? Because we'll check in.
Well, 12 months, I'm hoping, I don't even know if I can say it. I definitely want to be monetized. That's a given.
What is 100,000 subscribers giving? Or 100, what is it,
100,000? Well, 1,000 gets you, you'll be monetized with 1,000, but you would probably be making about $100 a month in YouTube ad revenue. So
what do you do with all that?
But you know, it's the stepping stone, really.
Yep.
You know, you go from 2 to 15 pretty quickly. You go from 15 to 50 pretty quickly. La la la. All of that said, I would say that I'll probably be at 1,000 subscribers by 6 months at the most.
Right.
It would take 6 months. So in a year, I would really love to come back here and say I have 50,000 subscribers. Mm-hmm. But more than that, it's not just about the subscribers, because the subscribers is just is really just the network. Mm. I want to be also using that as the leap pad for the Etsy page, the website page. The right. You know, the subscribers are across many different channels.
Okay, so that's your distribution channel. So this is the website's the distribution channel. Etsy's a distribution channel.
Yeah.
You know, YouTube's a distribution channel, and each one of them, I guess, has a business model that's going to bring cash in.
Yeah. And I would also really like to be able to say that I've got someone handling my marketing by then.
What would that cost?
Well, I don't know. I honestly haven't looked into it, because
it'd be a part-time job.
It would definitely be a part-time job.
It's only a day a week.
It would definitely be a day a week, because it would just be, here's all my video footage. You make sense of it, because that's the thing that really, I think that
also,
is
that would be
one
producer.
Of the things.
As yeah. well as marketer.
Producer, marketer, they can put together the reels and pump them out on the Instagram. And, you know, it's that side that I think a lot of people who go down this road of a YouTube channel, that's why they fail. Mm. It's not because the passion and the knowledge that they want to share is something that is the burden. The burden is the marketing.
If there aren't people who now or later don't listen to this and get an immense amount of value about listening to, you know, a person who, you know, so passionate about, you know, what they're doing, and yet kind of constrained. You're a mom, and you're not your native country.
No, well, that's right. We didn't even touch on that. So I'm not American, just so everyone knows that. At the very end, I am Canadian.
You're out in a boot.
Hence the people pleasing attitude. Oh.
You didn't say sorry once.
No.
Well, thank you so much
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
It's been fantastic, and I'll see you. I don't know. I don't even think it'll be a year. I reckon 6 months later we're going to get you in again.
I hope so. Right. That would be great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Peter.
Okay, so the interview finished at that point, but Wendy and I kept talking, and I let the microphone run. And I'm going to include some of the conversation because I think it's important. Thank you.
All right. Well, I don't feel like I really have much to offer your audience.
You would be surprised. I think that was fantastic.
Do you really?
I really, really do. Because
really
I think...
Just rambled think, on about how I hate this and I don't do that.
No, but it's real. When you, you know, this conversation is important because that's not the only type of entrepreneur. So you are, as far as I'm concerned, just as a legitimate an entrepreneur. Have entrepreneurial tendencies, and so you can deploy those skills and deliver something for yourself. So it's 50 grand a year, okay? 50 grand a year. But also, other women will hear this, and I didn't dig into the difference between men and women or whatever too much, quite consciously, because seriously, I don't give a fuck. You know, I don't like framing our relationships. We've got a human relationship, you know, and I can Mary drive this into me, and rightly so. We've got a human relationship. Yeah, then there's a gender piece, whether we date, you know, but, you know, we're friends.
Yeah.
Okay, and, you know, I want the best for you, and, you know, that's the basis upon which we do stuff. To come in at a case of women, you're a female entrepreneur. Tell me about that. I think it's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a lens through. This is why I talked about the fish, right? It's you're in the water. What's the water? Well, the water is life.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's right.
It's not your gender.
Yes.
Okay. But it's like, you know, just as important as, okay, you're tall, you're short, you're smart, you're dumb, you're a male or you're female. So they're all factors for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to deal with those things, but they're not the you know, the basis upon which this is, you know, be successful or not successful.
Yeah.
So the fact that you can't deal with a no is really about you understanding that you've got that, and then you are ready for it. Okay. Whereas, you know, we blokes get that beaten into us because, you know, we get told to fuck off, we're not good looking enough all the time.
That's true. And
except for some bastards who just get them all.
But those ones who do hear no, then don't know how to deal with it.
No,
right?
I've seen that. Look, They're like a robot. Go,
okay. Yes. Was it you telling me about the who's the famous Australian sprinter?
No, I wasn't telling us.
What's her name? She's Aborigine.
Oh, yeah, like Kathy Freeman.
Kathy Freeman. Yeah. Someone was telling me about the book that reading the book that she wrote, and growing up, it was actually her brother that was set to be the Olympian that the family had put up on the pedestal and was doing everything for, because he was super successful and he never lost anything, and he was destined for the Olympics. Until he failed for the first time.
And never bumped into that thing.
And then he didn't know how to deal with it. Exactly. Didn't know. Whereas Kathy had failed multiple times. She was always picking herself up and getting back in the game and trying again. And, well, he never ended up being successful. And she was the one that won the Olympics.
Yeah, so. She's amazing. But I get what you're saying. And there's some interesting research around kids who struggle with education, so for instance, reading, right? And so there's a graph, the kids who read really, really early and really was good at, they do this, grade five, grade six, year seven, eight, and kind of they flatten out.
Yeah.
Right? But the ones that came in low and then really had to work hard at it,
yes.
Like really worked hard at it, they don't all work hard at it, of course, but the ones that worked hard at it, learned how to read, and learn how to push through the difficulties of reading, hockey stick up.
Right.
And then overtake.
Yeah.
So having, and this is something in the, in entrepreneurship as far as I'm concerned, having grit and determination is a big part of it. Doggedness.
Yes.
This isn't me saying, so many people have said it, but I hear it now. Whereas before I couldn't hear it, whatever, I've got to be smart, I've got to be beautiful, whatever.
Right.
But just having tenacity, there's something to it. And just go, you don't have to, an old lecturer said this, you don't have to be that much better, you just have to be a little bit better. Just, it's like, if a lion is chasing you, how fast do you need to run? Just a little bit faster than the other person.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have to say, I'm really taking that advice on board with this because, any industry, I guess you're always looking at, you're always seeing the most successful person and then trying to measure yourself against that most successful person, which of course is miles away.
Yep.
And when you're creating art, who are you seeing? You're seeing these hugely successful artists, and it's hard not to look at that and go, well, I didn't make that. I can't even begin to make what they just made. So therefore I can't do it. But in actual fact, you do only have to be a little bit better than the average person dusting off their kitchen table going, right, I want to do that. Yeah. Okay, great. As long as I'm better than the person who's dumping resin down the drain because they think that's an appropriate way to get rid of glue, then I'll be fine. I will always have an audience of people that need to know what I know. Yeah. And I think that's good.
Okay, thanks for listening to my discussion with Wendy Franks. I love chatting to Wendy. She's definitely a glass half full person. If you would like to comment, please email me at hello@entrepreneurship.au. This podcast is supported by Christo Partners. If you have a startup or corporate venture you are launching and are interested in advice, raising capital, or connecting with other businesses, feel free to reach out at christopartners.com or email hello@christopartners.com. Thanks, and until next time, this is Entrepreneurship with Peter Christo.